the players, the personalities who come from around the world to play professional soccer in the United States.
In a world where some call it football, football, or soccer, they dare to call it foosball. One thinks New York is blue, the other thinks New York is red. Soccer in America from a German perspective. Let them put some sauerkraut on your hot dog and join them for the Schnitzel Boys USA Hour.
Yeah. Yay! 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 Okay, continuing on our pretzel discussion from last hour.
Oh, yeah, everybody was waiting for that to be continued.
Bjorn is a German man who moved to the United States in the 90s.
Yes.
What is your favorite American food that you're like, hell yeah?
I don't like
from one country to the next, plenty you leave behind. You're just like, what is this? Sweet tea? This is disgusting. But then there's plenty where it's like, ooh, this is good. I like this. What is your favorite? If you could bring back one American food item to Germany properly, what would it be?
One American food item?
Two. I'll give you two. One entree, one dessert.
An entree? I mean, like, burgers are unrivaled. The American burger culture is, and just sandwiches in general, I guess, like...
Like a sub, like an Italian sub?
Or like the, you know, Katz's pastrami sandwich, right. Very strong.
Oh, yeah.
Pastrami is a very... I feel good about burgers in general. I mean, American cuisine, even just in the time that I've been here, has improved so much. It's
right.
It's no longer second rate at all. There's a lot of good food in America. That'd be hard to.
I think restaurants have also upped their game.
When
I was a kid, like in the '90s. In the 90s, like, I go to the Sizzler as a joke because I love the Sizzler. In the 90s, the Sizzler was where people ate. Now it's some forgotten backhole because you go to, like, a real name chef restaurant where a chef has a...
Places.
Yeah.
Lots of good restaurants. The whole Mexican food culture is incredible.
Like, but that's not really that. American. That's a little unfair. I understand we do maybe our own
but
thing.
But it is, and it. I mean, it is, though.
Well, it depends on what it is. But there's, like, I think nachos are American. I don't think there's anything Spanish about nachos.
Well, I'm here for all of it. I'm here for authentic Mexican. I'm here for Tex-Mex. I'm here for California style burritos. I'm into it all. I like all of that. Yeah.
I asked you to pick one and you've been picking
one.
Several.
Yeah, no.
It's hamburgers.
I cannot. Barbecue brisket, pulled pork, American style. Barbecue pulled pork.
Is that the one? So that's the one.
I would, if I had to, either that or pastrami.
All right, I'll take it. What about a dessert item? Or are you just like, none of the American dessert items are good enough to be taken back?
Also not the case at all. Eileen's special cheesecake in New York City rivals the finest pastries of the homeland, in my opinion.
Oh, that's big words. That's big words.
I mean, it's different. It's cheesecake, you know. Like, so I guess that's my American. I mean, pie too. Although the pie, German fruitcakes or fruit tarts can compete. Or like Germans make a good shortcake with some fruit in it. That's pretty amazing.
I would consider
pies you can find a suitable substitute, but the cheese, I don't know, there's nothing like I mean, in Germany they have cheesecake too, but it's like, that's not the same.
Yeah, I think with fruit torta, for me, they're superior to an American pie, to be honest. I just prefer the fruit torta. The fruits taste better because they're less processed, kind of. They're in this gelatin, but an Erdbeer torta or Himbeer torta, like the fruit, they taste good, but they're not like overly sweet. They're just delicious and tart, and then I don't
that's,
know.
that used to be very dramatically true, but as I would say, like as the American cuisine has improved, that's also that you can find pies in New York that are not. Oh, excuse me.
You dying?
They're what? Not overly sweet. I just needed some water after all this talk about foods. Yeah.
I went to Outback Steakhouse on Saturday. Got myself a big old ribeye. It did not disappoint.
Outback Steakhouse?
I know.
All right.
I'm always on the hunt for a budget steak. And so there is, we talked about this before, but one of our listeners goes to the steakhouse a lot, 2 hours north of me. And they have a big steak challenge, and you get a free T-shirt. And I think I'm going to do that at some point.
I'll
keep you posted, everybody. I'll keep everybody posted.
Yeah, I like a steak, but they make good steaks in Germany. That's not really a huge problem.
It's kind of that's surprising to hear, though, because Germany in general is not a steak culture.
Well, we had, I mean, I guess this is all imported, you know? It's right. Like there was an Argentinian steak chain. I mean, I think it was a German company, but they were priding themselves in their Argentinian grass-fed steaks, and they were a chain restaurant, so they were nothing super special. But that's where we went frequently when
growing
I was
up.
A kid.
Oh, yeah. So it's and, like it's like their own version of Outback Steakhouse.
Yeah, exactly. And it was solid. They had the baked potato with sour cream, that was a thing that you ate there. That was not something that my parents would make.
That's not an Argentinian thing, though. They
I guess that's
that.
True. Yeah, right. No, it's like a...
Real Argentinian steakhouse is excellent, but it's just getting the steak. They don't really have a lot of sides
for it. Yeah, I recently went to Buenos Aires, the place in the East Village. It's excellent Argentinian steak. Yeah, I very rarely miss, you know, it's German dairy products. That's the only, that's the one thing I really, that is not really replicated here. But other than that, I think, yeah, lots of American food I like. The whole Thanksgiving thing, I'm very fond of the Thanksgiving meal that we do here once a year. I really enjoy that. Yeah, lots of things. I like lots of American food.
As a German-American, I grew up eating a German-American Thanksgiving. So my Thanksgiving meal was always turkey. But then it was also Kartoffeln und Rotkohl. I mean, that's German.
Okay.
There was no Kartoffeln und Rotkohl in the Native American pilgrim first Thanksgiving. Real Thanksgiving foods like yams and like stuffing and
potatoes,
corn and sweet potatoes.
The stuffing is that's a very specific thing that I really
marshmallow
like.
Pudding or marshmallow pie, you know, all this stuff. Most of that stuff I never ate growing up, and to this day it's fine, but it's sort of outside of it. For me, it was turkey, it was rotkohl, it was potatoes, you know, and then that's my weird. And then, you know what's funny? I for Thanksgiving 1 year, I went to Quebec City.
Oh, okay.
And Quebec City is Canadian. Their Thanksgiving's in October. But on Thanksgiving Day, they had this restaurant that had a Thanksgiving special meal that I ordered, and the meal was turkey, mashed potatoes and red cabbage and gravy. I was like, dang, that's exactly what I always eat.
Not bad.
I didn't even know that was a thing people did. I didn't know they mix and match that, you know. Quiz, Bjorn.
Uh-huh.
What famous American Christmas movie features a regular meal of red cabbage?
Home Alone?
The narrator in the movie is like, oh, my mother's red cabbage. It's a specialty. She makes red cabbage every year. Is that the only place American media have ever seen referred to red cabbage?
It's a Wonderful Life.
No, it's not Home Alone. It's a Wonderful Life.
Die Hard?
No, not Die Hard, although that's a good bet because a bunch of Germans are in it. Clue. It's a Christmas movie. Clue, the famous scene as a kid gets his tongue stuck to the pole.
What? Dumb and Dumber?
Not Dumb and Dumber, but that also happened in that movie. No, I actually visited, I know this isn't going to help you at all, I actually visited the filming location of the house. It's like a museum now of the movie.
Oh.
In Cleveland, Ohio, if that helps. Midwest.
No, I don't have it.
The movie is called A Christmas Story.
Oh.
Have you ever seen it?
I don't think I've ever seen that.
Oh, it's a classic. Every year, TBS plays it for 24/7 straight. 24/7 hours straight. There's a scene that they're a Midwestern couple from the 60s or the 50s. But the mother makes rotkohl, fresh rotkohl, for dinner.
Well, good for her. I have never seen it.
Yeah. Anyway, please at home, check it out. That house is a museum in Cleveland, Ohio. I have visited it.
Amazing.
I loved it. It was a great museum. But anywho, speaking of Cleveland, Ohio.
Yes.
There's no MLS team in Cleveland, Ohio, but there almost was once. A little MLS history for you. Cleveland, Ohio announced an MLS team once upon a time. Did you know that?
I did not.
Owned by one Drew Carey, of course.
Drew Carey. Cleveland. Yes.
I think this was announced with Real Salt Lake, I want to say, but then that canceled, and then Chivas took over. But Cleveland was announced by the league as being like the next expansion franchise once upon a
when
time.
When was this?
This would have been the early aughts, 03, 04, 05-ish, something like that. But that never came to fruition. It canceled, obviously, and Cleveland never got an MLS team. But Columbus has an MLS team.
Yeah, and they're playing Monterrey on Wednesday.
Yeah, there was a great Monterrey game this past week. Going back to what I said at the last hour, I'm a little bit more into the midweek games right now in this time of our lives. Because, you know, MLS is fine. They're a fourth of the – I just realized there's a – they're a fourth of the way in. I guess I didn't realize that's how far we're into it. But, yeah. You know, it's the MLS regular season. Doesn't matter for 66% of the game, you know. And, however, Columbus Crew is fighting for the league. In midweek, they're playing Monterrey. They had a 2-1 home game, and boy, was it a great game. Did you get a chance to check it out?
Mm-hmm,
end-to-end, back and forth, high risk, high play, and thankfully Columbus came out of that with a win. It would have been nice if they came out with a little bit of a more of a win.
Yeah, because we were talking about the away goal rule, which is still in effect in CONCACAF.
No, really?
Yeah.
Oh, is that true?
It was last I checked.
Maybe. Well, Columbus Crew had to go to penalty kicks, right? After a 1-1 and a 1-1.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because it's 1-1 and 1-1.
Because the same.
Oh, they used to not have a away goal rule. Did they switch? It's the other way around. Now they both switch?
They've had the away goal rule for a while, and they still do. So that one goal looms large.
It's a big goal, then.
Yeah,
it's a big goal. Well, Columbus has to... I know they're not playing for a draw, but a draw will do it. So I wish them best. But... I don't know. I'm rooting for like how Bayern mentioned everyone roots for them when they play in Europe. Everyone's a Columbus Crew fan right now for the games outside of the U.S. They're fighting for MLS. They're playing the mighty Monterrey. I think the Columbus Crew Club America final will be a fun final.
I think I don't always root for that, but I think also Columbus is a very likable team. Wilfred Nancy is a great coach and.
They're the anti-Miami.
So I guess I am. I guess yeah. I am rooting for them. Yeah.
You know, Tata didn't play his kids and says we don't have quality enough. It's like, Tata, go blow it out your ass. And then Wilfred Nancy is like, oh, I don't have a problem with quality with a third of your wage bill.
I'm going to bench my DP striker.
Right. I'm going to bench Cucho. I'm going to play this Canadian rookie I found from the Toronto Academy, and he's going to score my winner for it. You know what I mean? That's how you're supposed to do it. You find your players. And, you know, half of the Columbus Crew squad are players from the system, from USA and Canada that they found, you know.
Mm-hmm. Futsal legend Mo Farsi, yeah.
Did he play at all?
Yeah, he played.
He played? The big thing was that Canadian kid. What's his name? I should look this up. Literally, he was an unused player in the Toronto Youth Academy. But Wilfred Nancy knew him, brought him in, and he scored the winning goal. He scored the go-ahead goal on Wednesday. And he's the guy that replaced, what's-his-face, Cucho, who was suspended the first game. His name is the other Canadian, Jason Russell Rowe. Jason Russell Rowe and Mo Farsi, the Canadians, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, Will Sands. New York never used him for whatever reason, so Columbus got their hands on him, and now he's a key figure. Derek Jones is the other guy I was thinking of. They're using Derek. You know, and Darlington Nagme, veteran American DP. Like, this is a deep squad. Diego Rossi is doing really well. You know, and Cucho was an excellent scout. They do have a couple of foreigners, obviously, but they scouted them well, and they're really key figure foreigners. But the rest of the squad is like an American, a Canadian backbone team. So, you know, young Patrick Schulte in goal, and who's about to go play for the Olympics. Yeah, Columbus Crew doing it right. Middle America fighting for us all against the
fighting
Mexican man.
For us all.
Against the Mexican man. So go them. Go them. They have excellent. A big game Monterey on Wednesday.
I hope it works out. But you know who's creeping up the standings here in MLS?
Just waiting.
What?
Well, I was going to say NYCFC, right?
Toronto. No.
Oh, Toronto.
No, that's not who I'm talking about.
You guys are on a winning streak now.
We've won three in a row. This homestand, obviously, we're on a 5-game homestand. Why is there even homestands? Just because we have these baseball stadiums. Anyway, 5 games in a row, and we've won 3 and tied 1. So, and that's good enough for 6th place right now. Look at that. Ahead of Philadelphia, only 3 points behind you guys. And we got one more game left against Colorado, which is not as fearsome as previously advertised. So maybe another one. We had to... this was a funny thing that happened because, you know, Twitter's
not
real.
So to be clear, you're not going to talk about Toronto. You are now going to talk about NYCFC.
No, I'm not going to talk. I don't care about Toronto. So
it was a joke.
Yeah.
They're not creeping up the table. Toronto's not creeping up the table, are they?
No, they've been doing, they're still ahead of us.
They're
doing fourth. Right.
They're fourth.
Yeah. They've been up there. We've beaten them, though.
Yeah.
I'm not going to talk about Toronto.
Well, Toronto. All right, sorry. So you're the homestand. I went CFC. Whatever.
Whatever.
Don't let me interrupt. Yeah. Don't let me interrupt.
Feel us. You can feel our breath on the back of your neck. We're only 3 points behind, but we still have not. We finally got a goal from somebody who's playing the number 9. Full credit belongs to Nick Cushing because we were struggling in the second half. I thought. We gave up an early goal, and then Keaton Park's towering header equalized, and I thought we were going to come out in the second half and destroy this team, but that was not the case. The Charlotte press was good. They were very compact. And I was like, I don't think we're going to win this game. And then Nick Cushing makes the sub, and everybody thinks he's bringing the Serbian wonder child, Jovan, who's back in town, but he did not. He brought off Alonso Martinez, who's... a winger, I thought, but he's coming in at the 9, and there's a collective groan going through the stadium because we're trying to get a winner, and the front line is Hannes Wolf, Martinez, and who was on the left? Ojeda, I think, who collectively had not scored a lot of goals. But then Martinez scored the winner in stoppage time, so... We were ragging on. Are you reading your email?
I'm listening to you. I'm reading Matt.
You're
Matt
not fully.
Doyle's.
You're not. You're not. You're not. You're not paying attention to the extent that I would like you to.
You want to know what I'm reading? You know what I'm reading? I'm reading Matt Doyle's analysis of NYCFC right now.
Oh yeah.
So I'm listening to you and lining it up with what Matt Doyle said.
I read that already. I think he's thinking the kids are getting better. Julian Fernandez has been good.
Yeah, and he says late goal from Alonso Martinez, right?
Yeah.
And then he says, "What's next?" Yeah, he's.
Munsef Bakrar is on his way out, and I agree with him. I think he's going to be a sub, although. Jovan did not see any time this weekend, and he hasn't done anything either. So I think the number 9 position is still a question mark. But what I was going to say is that a funny thing, you know, Twitter is not real life, right? We think people who are on Twitter treat it as if it's the only thing that matters, and there's these, you know. Anyway, somebody decided a fellow podcast, I think Post 90 or the City Boys show. There's so many NYCFC podcasts.
Right, there's a lot of them.
One of them... came up with the idea that because this happened to Tati Castellanos when he was in Girona, he missed a real sitter against Barcelona and was really broken up about it, like deleted his social media, like just was very, very upset. Tati Castellanos in Girona. And then the fans, to lift him up, gave him a standing ovation in the 9th minute of the next game. To lift up his spirits, and that meant a lot to him. And
In
Girona. Then he scored 4 against Real Madrid, and the rest is history. Now, the City Boys show suggested we should do the same for Munsef Bakrar, who also is struggling and has a case of the yips. He cannot hit the broadside of a barn currently. And so this was talked about on Twitter, but then when the ninth minute came around, it was
three
didn't
guys.
Really happen. It was really only two people. Yeah. And it didn't really catch on. We were already behind. We had, at that point, Charlotte had already scored, so the mood was down. So this didn't happen. And Munsif Bakra was asked about it, and he said, yeah, somebody told me about it ahead of time. This was going to happen, but then the ninth minute came. I heard nothing.
Now he's double downtrodden.
I think he took it. He took it lightly. I don't think okay. he. But he is really snake bitten. He scored one goal that was called off for offside. He hit the post and then it bounced off the. He gets himself into good spots, but he just cannot finish. So if we ever get a nine that can actually score, who knows what this team is capable of? Santi Rodriguez has become the number 10. We've always hoped he could be. No, things are looking pretty good. And Nick Cushing, you know, he took a lot of grief, but he gets credit for that sub. I was like, I didn't see it. I was like, why is he bringing that guy? But he scored. So that's it.
Good for him. He's a genius. Some days you're
he's
dumb,
a genius. I've always said so. I've always said so.
Well, what you just said about if we get a capable number nine who can score, who knows what happens. How many MLS clubs or soccer teams in the world do you think that applies to?
Fair. I mean, it's a big, especially in this league where the margins are so small, that makes a big difference whether you can put it in the... I mean, DC United, they have Benteke and not much else.
Right.
And that's keeping them afloat. Seattle, you know, Raul Ruiz Diaz, Father Time, has basically caught up with.
Yeah.
And now they're back there. Yeah, that's a big thing. Sporting Kansas City is struggling.
We'll take Benteke in RP. Where Matt Doyle's analysis of us is the same as my analysis of us. How about that? It's over the summertime. I'd love a new number nine, but that's about it. Everyone else is pretty on point. But you know, the whole we need a number nine, and that's just such a cheap analysis, to be honest. Everybody needs a number nine. I guess there's some LAFC doesn't need a number nine. They've got two number nines, like you said. The UC United doesn't need a number nine, so some do have number nines.
Right. I mean,
a handful.
We have two that are supposedly good, but they just haven't. And we've been through this. I mean, there was a.
In theory, we have three or four of them too. But if they're not scoring goals, then we need another one. You know, I don't know.
Tati Castellanos went through a phase like this in 2021, like where he in the summer, like June, July of 2021, he could not hit anything. He went through like an 8-game streak without scoring, and he ended up winning the Golden Boot. Like these things can turn. Usually, I mean, that's the thing about XG. You know, usually these things do revert, but apparently currently Munsif Bakra is underperforming his XG more than any player. Since they started keeping these kinds of stats.
In the history of the modern game, sure.
Well, I mean, XG hasn't been... I mean, how many years have we been keeping XG records for this league? Not that many. So it's not like the entire history of the game, but the last few years. Yeah. But he gets into good spots. I think, I don't know, maybe it'll turn.
We'll see. I wonder if that's an off-field thing. Tati Castellanos was quite the star in the Lazio Derby this past week, and he scored a brace, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
The dude's scoring. I wonder if that's just a case of not working with your team super well yet or something, or if it's just something off field that we're not privy to, that they don't share. You know, maybe people get distracted on stuff. I don't know.
I think sometimes it's also just shit happens, I think. I don't know that there's even a bigger explanation. It's like, I mean, how can you explain the ball hits the post? It's just a weird thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, the New York Red Bulls had a 1-1 tie against Vancouver, a team we haven't played in 5 years, by the way.
Ooh.
Yeah, MLS scheduling is so weird. It's like you play everyone in your conference like three times. That is whatever. And then you play some of the other conference once, but that always changes. And for whatever reason, MLS keeps those teams relatively the same every year. Like, we played LAFC this year. We played LAFC last year, too. But we haven't played LA Galaxy, and God knows how. You know what I mean? Some of those weird things where they must have some sort of marketing bot telling them what the better sales are looking. You know what I mean? Something like that. Because Vancouver came to visit us, and we haven't played them since the 2018 MLS season, I think. Something like that. which is a treat because in this league where we play the same teams over and over again, it's nice to play a team we haven't played in a while. So we played Vancouver. And who's Vancouver's star? Brian White, the one that got away. When it was time for Barlow or White to go, the team got rid of Brian White and they kept Tom Barlow, which is a huge thing. We didn't want that to happen. And he really showed up. Him and Ryan Gaul are a key members of Vancouver. And Vancouver's having just as good of a start as the Rebels are this year. They're coming and swinging. Where are they right now? They're like third or something. Where are they at?
Yeah, Vancouver's doing well.
Vancouver is third in the West. New York Rebels is third in the East. We're at 17. They're at 17. So in a lot of ways, we're mirrors of each other. We both have a German sporting director. You know, a lot of ways we're mirrors of each other. But Brian White came to the New York Rebels and he scored that goal. When Metro gets rid of players, when we get rid of players,
just to rub it in.
Well, they just come back and they score. Brian White scored early. The mighty Lewis Morgan scored an equalizer, and a good hard-fought 1-1 draw at home. We would like to have had a win, so maybe Vancouver got the best of us. But, you know, still decent, solid play, and, you know, we'll take that number 9 any day now. You know, but overall, it's still okay. I want to see a little more from Dante Vanzeri. He's been doing well assisting and whatnot and working his butt off, and he's doing fine, but I still think Dante Vanzeri has a high gear he hasn't gotten into. Lewis Morgan's in high gear. Thumbs up to that. Amen, brother. Emil Forsberg doing great. Noah Eile
got himself a red card. The two of them have a little bit of chemistry going, right?
All of them. When they score, Von Zier, Morgan, and Emil Forsberg hug each other like long-lost brothers. It's so cool. Three of them are into each other. The three Europeans are having a good time.
He's also single currently, so I guess.
In New York. I mean, with a DP salary and a fresh set of blonde hair from Sweden. I mean, I don't know. Who knows? He's having a good time.
We don't have to feel sorry for Emil.
No. But up top, they're doing well. In the back, we've had some injuries, and the Nils brothers have been pulling their weight. The young Norwegian, Grenjar, we're still keeping an eye on him. He's been getting more minutes. You know. So overall, Rebels doing well. We're fourth in the season. Let's hope they keep the spunk up, the energy up, and maybe they can add a new number 9 in there to really freaking get them an overdrive. Still thumbs up. Still thumbs up for the Rebels.
Yeah, and we had not beaten Charlotte previously in 5 games, so that was a big one. And to your point, we have not played Austin.
Right. There is a weird thing around, where certain teams
have not
played.
They've been around for
a
couple of years. We're playing them this year. We're playing them on the road.
Are you going?
Because I have a friend. No, he's not going to be around. He's going to Scotland, so he's not going to be there. So I'm not going to go. But yeah, because I have a friend in Austin, I've been looking at the schedule every year. And this year, finally, it could happen, but he's not around. So I'm not going. Anyway, but it's going to be another 5 years until we play there again.
Yeah, but isn't that weird? It's like just 30 teams. It's like...
Yeah. Mix it up.
Right. If you played LAFC last year, then this year you play San Jose Earthquakes or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Because they're terrible anyway. It's good.
Last year the New York Rebels had a stretch of games. They did play Seattle. Then they had to play Miami. So they had to fly to Seattle. Then fly from Seattle to Miami, which is the ultimate FU. Right. And then from Miami, fly back to New York for their home. You know what I mean? It's like, what the heck?
We don't have a lot of those. This year, we don't have a lot of like crazy travel. I mean, we're going to LA for Galaxy, but that's kind of it for the big.
When is that? I'll go to that game. Is that coming up soon?
LA, that's June 19th.
I'll go to that. I'll be there for Juneteenth. I'll be there.
I don't think I'll probably won't fly out, but
I'll give you a report.
We have all the home games now, so there's going to be a lot of road games for us coming up.
I'm hitting the road this weekend. I'm going to see Inter Miami play the New York Rebels in Florida.
That's right.
Like a road fan following, you know, sticks or whatever. I'm on the road following my New York Rebels. I saw their LA game, and I'm going to see the Florida game. Maybe sometime later this year, I'll be able to catch a home game again, like I did last year. I've been able to see them live this month twice. So there you go. For a man who lives the other side of the country, it's not bad.
It's not bad.
But so with Columbus Crew fighting for our hearts next week and MLS rolling along, MLS announced quite a bit of a few roster changes, but MLS snuck a couple of in-game experience changes on us this last week, Bjorn. I guess we could talk about last week.
Yeah. Let's hear it.
Okay, so there are three new rules MLS have implemented. The first rule listed here is called the off-field treatment rule. The off-field treatment rule allows medical professionals with time to assess and treat players off the field in a less pressure environment. If a player remains on the ground for more than 15 seconds, the referee will stop playing, wave the medical crew to evaluate the player. When safe, the player will be removed from the field and remain off the field for a minimum of 2 minutes for further assessment. So that's the off-field treatment rule.
So, okay, can I translate though?
Yeah. There's also exceptions.
So because the statement says that this will give medical personnel a chance to evaluate these players without pressure. But really what it says is, like, if you're going to stay down for more than 15 seconds,
right,
you have to get off the field for 2 minutes.
So that they can keep playing the game, right?
Yeah. So think wisely. If you're going down to waste time, you know, get back up. I mean, I guess people will now, like, count in their head. So get back up after 12 seconds, or else you're going to have to be out for 2 minutes.
So this, of the three rules, this is one of two of them which are time wasting based rules.
That's what that is for. It's not because medical professionals
They don't want people flipping and flopping and oohing and aahing. I'll always remember this was against a Champions League game or against Colombia or something. A guy was injured in the field for 2 minutes, and then they forcibly removed him off the field, kind of like the opposing players. And he stood up, walked perfectly, and then put his hand in his hands, ow, and fell again. Because he knew he was wasting minutes on the field with his injury. This eliminates that. This means by law or by rule, by MLS rule, you got 15 seconds to figure out what's going on, or else you go off the field and we keep playing. And then you get off the field for 2 minutes, which means you'll be down a man for 2 minutes. Okay, thumbs up to me. I think that's fine. I'm curious what kind of side effects, like you said, that'll have. If that means people now start counting to 15 and boop, boop, bop, we'll see what that means.
That's fine.
The second rule, also related to time wasting, is called the timed substitution rule. Maximizing effective match time. The timed substitution rule requires that a substituted player exit the field within 10 seconds. That's the old slow walk across the field, right? While a team captain on the other side, like, pushes them a little bit. Failure to exit from any point of the field within 10 seconds will cause the incoming player to have to wait for 60 seconds before entering the game at the next stoppage.
Before they can come in. Right. So same kind of thing. And this sort of piggybacks onto the other rule change. I don't actually remember when that happened. That you now can leave the field in any direction.
Right.
You no longer have to. Because that used to be a thing where people...
Right, they'd walk
who knew... They would make their way to the opposite side of the field when they knew they were going to be substituted, just so that it would take them longer. So that's not a thing anymore. You can now go off anywhere, and you have to do it within 10 seconds. Yeah, all right.
So this reminds me, a little bit sidetrack here, but... Back in my young Brazil high schooler days, there was this famous Brazilian national championship. I want to say it was Corinthians versus Sao Paulo. And a guy got a red card on the 88th minute. It was Luizão, even, maybe, who was on the 2002 team. Well, they were leading, and it was the final. But it was at the 88th minute. He got a red card. He was supposed to leave. But all he did was, like, run around the field and, like, just clap at the fans and stuff. And then he took a shirt off and started, like, spinning a shirt around and running around in circles. And the refs and the other teams were like, get off the field. But he refused to get off the field. He just took his red card. And no matter how many times they push him off the field, he just, like, dodged them and just go running back in the crowd again and be like, yeah. The ref, after 90th minute, it's like, well, they just called it. They're like, well, there's nothing we can do about that. Corinthians won the national title in the Sao Paulo Championship, whatever the game was. I just always remember the player was just blatantly ignoring the rules for that day. And it's Brazil, and it's just like, you know, it's the final, whatever. There's really nothing much for us to do. It's actually supposed to leave the field. So anyway, I just love just a moment in Brazilian football. Anywho, and then the third rule, this is not related to time wasting. This is related to VAR, a little bit of clarity. This is right out of American football. It's in-stadium VAR announcements. VAR decisions will be explained and announced by the referee to fans in-stadium and broadcast viewers at home. So what that means, and the reason this this brings, the reason I'm bringing this up or why this came in my mind is because I witnessed this live at the LAFC game last weekend I was at.
Right, right.
A referee, I didn't even realize what was happening at the time. Afterwards, I'm like, oh yeah, I guess I did see that. Holy crap, it didn't even occur to me that that was a new rule. Is that when the referee goes to the screen for VAR and they make the decision, just like at a football, in American football, they then go on the field and on their speaker dealy, on their microphone, they announce their decision to the audience. They say, after VAR review, there was a pull on number 9 penalty or something. They'll just say out loud what the decision is. And then they say it out loud for everyone, which I love, by the way, because before it's been like, what are they announcing? What's he looking at? It's just, it gets rid of all the ambiguity. It's like, this is what we saw. This is the decision we made. We're sticking to it, you know, and then everybody can hear exactly what they said. Yeah. And those are the three new rules that have been implemented starting last weekend. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's good. I think I'm down with the time-wasting rules. The injury stuff is always a little iffy. I don't know, because, yeah, people just go down too easily and pretty transparently just for time management reasons. So I think that's good. I think that's a positive to try and address that. We'll have to see how that works. The VAR announcements, I don't know. It's like, is that going to really, is that going to make a difference? I mean, most of the time, you know what the decision is, even if they're not saying it out loud. But, and we had a couple of tight VAR. I mean, they ultimately ended up confirming the on-field decision, so there was no announcement made. But yeah, I don't know. I'll have to see that in action. I guess the thing that bothers me about it is there is, you know, like in football they do this, in American football, and it's usually pretty clear cut there. There's less, I feel like there's less subjectivity in those rules in
That's
general.
True.
Soccer, there's always a gray area. It's never, I mean, there's obviously some black and white stuff. There's offside if you're either offside or you're not, and if you can measure that accurately, then it's a black or white kind of a thing. But a lot of the time, and that has been difficult in the English for sure. This idea of like making lines or pretending that there's any kind of science, I think is counterproductive, because it's not. There's always subjectivity. It's never black and white. And what we want, you know, what people say, oh, just want it to be consistent or what, it can't be done. Like, it can't be done. And right. So I don't know. Yeah, just make a decision and move on.
There are two other ones.
I mean, the only problem with decisions being wrong is if you have TV and you can kind of show replays and see, oh, the referee was wrong. You know, in like youth games, you never, you know, there's always controversy, but you don't have replays. So it's like, yeah, maybe he was right, maybe he wasn't. You know, I thought he may have been wrong, but you're not really, you know. The problem, unless there's like real bias, it's only important that the referee makes a decision and then you just move on. So,
yeah, I don't think it's not perfect, but I do like the fact that he is making an out loud announcement, because it eliminates the whole thing of like, what did he see? What's he calling? Even if it's wrong, he's allowed to say the decision he made and what he saw. And I think that eases the ambiguity, and I like that already.
Right.
I do feel there are ways to make offside a little more perfect. You know, I'm just like, can an AI program? We have the semi-automated AI. Offside.
Well, that's catching on, perhaps.
Right. I feel we're not at the end of the offside development.
Probably not. I mean, yeah, there's certainly technology that could be employed. I don't know.
Because call me crazy.
You're crazy.
I'm always crazy. I would be fine if everyone sat down and made an agreement that there is a little bit of a 3-inch grace period. And it's not necessary. So, you know, like right now they have computers analyzing the elbows off an inch. I'm fine adding a 3 or 4 inch grace period.
But that doesn't solve the problem. It's just like, then
as
you're
long
fighting
as it's on
over,
point, like a camera, like an off.
But then you're fighting then there's always, you know, then you're just moving the area that you're going to fight over. Yeah, it's not, that's not, that doesn't make anything easier.
Well, but
in
anyway,
my opinion. Yeah. But
so there's, yeah, two, there's the referees, two new rules.
Referees will always, we're always going to be mad. What bothers me actually is that they don't show replays in the stadium.
Yeah.
Because I guess they think we're going to riot or whatever.
Well, do they? I think they've shown, I think it depends. I think they,
it's
they
very
show replays at LAFC games. So.
They did not. This weekend, we had two on each end, actually. We had the Munsif Bakra goal was called off for offside, and the same on the other. On the other end, Capetti or whatever his name is, the number 9 of Charlotte had scored, and Matty Fries. By the way, our goalie Matty Fries, he's been great. He does make mistakes, but he gets very lucky in that they're not punished because he whiffed on a corner kick against DC United, and this again he had a bad whiff on a cross in. He came out and just completely missed the ball entirely, and it went in the goal, but it was called back for offside. So those two, I would have liked to see a replay in the stadium, but they didn't show us one in either case. It was, yeah, in the case of the Charlotte goal, the Bakrar goal was the check didn't take very long. In the case of the Capetti goal, it took quite a while. And also when Keaton Park scored, there was a long check for that one. And then they don't show us a replay. I don't know. I would like,
yeah,
to see
they should
that.
Show. I mean, LAFC games, we see all the replays, I think. I could be wrong. So maybe it depends on the stadium or whatever. Maybe NYCFC, maybe the Yankees charge you $50 a replay or something. You have to, so
there's
have to
a lot of
choose.
Replay, especially, I mean, both Yankee stadiums, especially City Field. City Field now has a gigantic
Jumbotron.
Yeah, a megatron. I don't know even.
Maybe
what
they
to
have
call
to pay
it.
For the electricity. They can't
it's
afford
enormous.
It.
It's enormous. No. And they show a lot of things. They show the entire game on there. And, so it's not an electricity thing. It's some kind of a policy thing. Now they show us a new thing this year is that they show you stoppage time. They didn't used to do that either. The clock would stop at 90 minutes.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
And then you would have to kind of set your own watch to see how much is left. That's no longer the case. So this replay thing they need to change to.
Right. So there's been 5 rules this year: 2 at the beginning of the season, and 3 in the middle of the season. The 2 rules at the beginning of the season are the stoppage time clock in the stadium, which I love, yeah, by the way.
And why not? I mean,
right. It used to be just be like it's over, you guess, but it's weird. Just that now everybody knows how much stoppage time is. It's nice. And then the other one is called what is it called? It's called the return to play equity is what it's called. Opposing players who simultaneously incur head injuries requiring off-field treatment. If they're both cleared to play, they have to wait until they're both clear and they have to return at the same time. So very weird, specific little rule that I don't really care too much about. But that's the 5th rule of the 5 MLS new in-stadium rules this year. The 2, the in-stadium thing, return to play equity from the beginning of the year, and the other 3 we just talked about, the 2 time-wasting ones and the VAR calls are implemented starting last week. MLS in development. I mean, last week
happening.
New rules. This summer we got new rules. It's just they're just like this season will be in development as we
things
move
are
forward.
Happening. We're trying out stuff.
Trying
out some stuff.
I mean, next
we're
week
working,
could be like
workshopping.
New rule. Next week's
we're
like 2 more rules.
Workshopping some stuff.
Next week's like, you know what? 2 more new rules. In their defense, all these rules have been workshopped in MLS Next Pro first.
Yeah.
Before they implement into the big league. But what I will say is if these rules work, like the spirit of the rules are correct. Now, granted, it could just lead to them screwing with these new rules. But, like, if the spirit of the rules do well, then these rules can make their way to the Prem and to the Bundesliga. Maybe even where it needs to be down south in Mexico. Maybe even CONCACAF, which would be a blessing. Ugh. If CONCACAF were to commit to these rules. But, yeah, there you go. Those are the new MLS rules implemented.
Amazing.
Amazing. I say thumbs up on most if not all of it.
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up because I'm down with playing and not down with time wasting. Yeah, try to think if there's. Yeah, we have our Columbus Crew come this week. We got.
Watch the CONCACAF Champions League. We're playing Colorado at home. The end of the homestand. Back to Citi Field we go.
Homestand. What's your away game after that?
What a good question. I think we're going to Toronto. Hold on.
Who are we playing next?
I can tell you what the
Oh, yeah, we're obviously at Miami, and we're hosting New England our next two games.
Yeah, we're going to Toronto, then to Philly, then we play you guys, Citi Field, 5-18.
That'll be fun. That'll
then
be
we're
fun.
Going to New England, San Jose at home, Columbus, L.A., Nashville, the biggest trip. We do not have a lot of travel. L.A. and Austin are the biggest.
That's a good thing. And then, of course, we also have Leagues Cup in the middle of all that. And all that.
Oh, good. That's right. The beloved Leagues Cup. Well, we have next week. It's not this week. Next week, we have NYCFC2's open run continues, playing the Colorado Springs
Switchbacks at Bell's
Switch,
Stadium.
Whatever their name is. Yeah, and we're then, playing them.
Also, a quick shout-out. Our next two teams are New England and Miami for Rebel. They played each other over the weekend to a record crowd at Gillette Stadium. It was on the local news. Yeah. The messy effects continue. I love seeing, like, I love when local news gets on. That means it's a big deal to me. Like, yeah. CBS2 Boston had a report on YouTube. It was in my little algorithm. All these kids loving to see Messi. The Messi show, the Messi effect continues. It's just the roving. He can go to any. He packed Chicago. He packed Kansas City. He packed Boston. What can't he pack? What can't he pack? You know what I'm saying? All right.
He can pack it.
He can pack it. I'll see
you. If you build it, he will pack it.
If you build it, he will pack it. The great Kevin Costner, Lionel Messi movie. All right, buy our bucket hats. Send us emails. Tell your friends. We're
bucket hats. Come on now.
Come on now.
All right. We'll see you next week.
Tschüss.
Tschüss.